We're here at the 12th annual spring gathering of the Western Shoshone up at the base of Mount Tanabo. And we're speaking right now with Jennifer Allen, who's going to give us a little bit of an insight of some of the issues going on at the border. What is the organization that you work for? And could you explain a little bit about the issues that you folks are working with?
So I work for the Border Action Network, which is a human and civil rights organization based in Nogales, Douglas, and Tucson, Arizona. We work with Latino immigrants and border residents to ensure that our rights are protected, our dignity is upheld, and that our communities are safe places to live. We have three campaigns that we work on primarily. And I should say that kind of a fundamental issue to our organization is that we believe that those who are hit the hardest by border and immigration policy should be the ones who are at the forefront of the movement, calling for justice, calling for drastic, comprehensive reform in border and immigration policies. And for that reason, we do a lot of community organizing and really shifting and building the power and building the voice of immigrants and of the Latino residents who live in these communities. We have three primary campaigns. One is to challenge the growth of the anti-immigrant movement that has moved into southern Arizona. In the last 5 years, a number of groups have moved in from other places. They're armed, they dress in camouflage, they wear military or border patrol insignia, and they hunt down immigrants with dogs and hold them at gunpoint. And in many cases, people have been bitten by the dogs, have been pistol whipped, have been brutalized. Their fundamental rights have been violated. These are civilians. These are people who are part of a national network of white supremacy organizations, capitalizing on the fact that immigration has been concentrated in Arizona, immigration routes. The numbers have increased in Arizona, and they've been decreasing in California and Texas, and that's a result of U.S. Border Patrol's strategy of border enforcement. They started out in 1994 with Operation Gatekeeper and Operation Rio Grande and Hold the Line in California and Texas, and built up the border with walls, with agents, thousands of agents, lights, underground surveillance devices, a number of different kind of technology, and really fortified those urban areas where people used to cross. So now immigration routes have shifted, and people cross through the Arizona area, which is incredibly dangerous, desolate terrain. The summer months, it can get over 130 degrees in the desert, and people are coming across, and they'll walk for days on end. Deaths have been increasing exponentially every summer. Last summer, 270 men, women, and children died trying to enter this country. They died a gruesome death of exposure and dehydration. Now these groups, these anti-immigrant groups, have looked at this situation as an opportunity for them to push their larger agenda of demonizing immigrants, demonizing Mexicans. So they have moved in, hunt people down, and then put out these messages that immigrants are, a lot of racist messages about immigrants, about Latinos, about Mexicans. So we've been putting pressure on the Arizona Attorney General to step up and prosecute these groups. We've done thousands of postcards, petitions, letters from kids, delegation visits to his office. We've filed a lawsuit. We've actually got another lawsuit in the works on behalf of a man who was beaten by a vigilante. We just had a vigil in front of the Attorney General's house, a prayer vigil, where we brought up youth from Douglas and Nogales and Tucson, and we stood outside his house. We set up a shrine with La Virgen and had an Aztec dance group and prayed that he will equally enforce Arizona state laws and prosecute these racist groups for violating the basic rights of immigrants and border residents. We get asked a lot, sort of, how can these groups exist? How can they continue to not only exist but expand and thrive? But I think that part of that answer lies in the context in which that Arizona is in. We also have Border Patrol agents who do the same exact thing as these civilians, but in a state-issued uniform. Border Patrol agents do the same exact thing. They also violate residents' fundamental rights. They also are shooting immigrants for, they call it as a move of out of defense. You know, if an immigrant tosses a rock at them, or if an immigrant resists in any way, immigrants are getting shot by Border Patrol agents, and they're murdered. And then the agents get a slap on the wrist. There's a larger atmosphere of impunity along the border, where immigrants' lives and Latinos' lives are considered less than, are considered non-human. So agencies like the Border Patrol, these vigilante groups, and other federal agencies can sort of treat people, can treat immigrants and Latinos in any way they want, and then they get away with it. The organization is called Border Action Network. Our webpage is www.borderaction.org, and I do really encourage listeners to go to our webpage. There's a lot of different things that people can do from wherever in the world, from downloading postcards and sending them to the Arizona Attorney General, to shooting off some quick letters to Arizona Senator McCain, calling for him to be a spokesperson for comprehensive immigration reform. There's a lot of different things that people could do to support justice in the borderlands and to support immigrant and Latino civil and human rights. We have postcards that people can download and then make copies of, and then make a couple hundred copies and distribute to their friends, their family, their coworkers, and get other people to sign them and send them in to the Arizona Attorney General, calling for him to prosecute these hate groups that have taken over southern Arizona. The second campaign is called Derechos para Todos, or Rights for All. Within this work, we're working to ensure that Border Patrol uphold the basic civil rights of border residents and immigrants. The daily reality of border residents who, border communities like Nogales and Douglas, are more than 80% Latino. Spanish is the primary language spoken in more than 80% of households. And so then we have Border Patrol agents who are poorly trained, plopped into these communities, and there's 2,000 Border Patrol agents based along the Arizona-Mexico border. And they're all around in these communities, and they have been trained to racially profile. Their job is to stop, harass, question people that are brown. So subsequently, we've got undocumented legal permanent residents and citizens whose rights are violated on an ongoing basis. An example of this is a woman, Blanca. She's one of our members that lives in Nogales, Arizona. And she was over at her sister's house, and she had a headache. So she didn't have any aspirin at the house, so they walked up to her car to go get some aspirin out of the glove box. Blanca was carrying a glass of water with her, just a short, small glass of water. They walked up to the car, and she was going to get the ibuprofen and you know, drink the water at the car. So they walk up to the car. Nogales is very hilly, so they had to walk up about 35 steps up to the street where the car was parked. So by the time that they get up to the driveway where the car is parked, there's suddenly a Border Patrol agent appears. And the agent immediately sees Blanca, sees her sister, and he pulls out his gun. And agents are heavily, heavily armed. So they pull out some sort of semi-automatic weapon, and they hold Blanca at gunpoint and scream at her, and he accused her of having this little glass of water to give aid to an undocumented immigrant. And Blanca is terrified, is horrified at the fact that she's being held at this, you know, this guy's gun, and he seems out of control. He can't understand her. She's monolingual Spanish. He can't understand what she's saying, right? So he continues to just hold her at gunpoint and screaming at her. And the situation didn't calm down until the police showed up, because the other sister called the police on a cell phone. And the police show up, and then the guy finally put his gun down. That was 20 minutes later. And Blanca told the police officer, you know, I want to press charges. This is intolerable. And the police officer's response was, they're just doing their job. In another community, one of our members' daughters, called Virginia, was about 15 years old. She was play camping in her backyard, which is just desert scrub. She lived in the town of Pirtleville. And so she was play camping, and it was her and a brother, and they had set up a little tent, and they were, you know, maybe about 50 feet or so from their house. And Virginia had heard a noise out in the desert, and she got scared. So she grabbed her little backpack and started running back in towards the house. So unbeknownst to her, that the noise that she heard was actually Border Patrol agents. And it was Border Patrol agents that had seen this little tent set up. So the agents then see a short figure with a backpack running through the desert, and they they fired, and they shot, and they shot and hit her in the knee and completely shattered her knee out. So Virginia has had a number, like four different operations on her knee, and they're still in some sort of settlement, you know, trying to negotiate some kind of settlement with the Border Patrol. But, you know, still no apologies, and the Border Patrol is haggling around, you know, in terms of taking responsibility and being accountable for shooting at a 15-year-old. And these aren't necessarily even the most egregious cases. This is just what comes to mind at the moment. These stories are in everyone's home. They're in everyone's lives. So beyond that, so there's another level of not only being physically assaulted and always kind of you know, and having your basic rights always in question and always feeling suspect. But there's also a deep psychological impact in living now in a zone where the Constitution doesn't exist anymore. The border is a deconstitutionalized zone.
It sounds a lot like martial law.
It is, and it's also a strategy that we've heard called low intensity conflict. It's a strategy that's used in Chiapas. It's a strategy that military has used in Vietnam, where you create this sort of low intensity sort of warfare zone where the presence and sort of the psychological impact can suppress a community and can sort of suppress people's sense of that it's okay to speak out. And that's actually a large piece of what Derechos para Todos, what this campaign works to do, is to break through that silence and break through the fear so that residents can speak out and also that residents can have a vision for a better future as well. Because the agency has so much power. I mean, they're now under the Department of Homeland Security, that people feel like they are in a war zone and that if speaking out means serious repercussions and consequences. And what we're trying to do is notify the agency that ya basta, enough is enough, and that residents are not going to tolerate this situation. So we're documenting what's going on, putting in writing, and then bombarding the agency with letters. Here's my story, and we don't care how old it was, whether it was from 5 years ago to last week, so that we can sort of paving the way for holding them and calling them out in the open for these practices that have been tormenting residents in the communities for you know almost 10 years now. One of the things that we recognized is that one of the fundamental solutions to the situation, to anti-immigrant groups, to Border Patrol abuses, to the you know all the whole level of problems related to militarization is immigration reform. I mean, the reality is that we have what we're calling for is comprehensive immigration reform, and that is our third campaign. So, because one of the strong needs for the U.S. to massively overhaul our immigration policies is that we have got to recognize, one, our independence on immigrant labor within this country, and then secondly, it's also in recognition of the impacts of U.S. economic policies in Mexico and Latin America. You know, I think a lot of people sort of feel like instead of the U.S. working on immigration reform, that Mexico needs to sort of clean up their own house. But I think the sort of problem with that analysis is that it ignores the impacts of NAFTA that the U.S. has driven through the Mexican economy. So, for example, with NAFTA, and after the passage of NAFTA was the sort of forced passage of the removal of the ejido system in Mexico. The ejido system permitted communities to have sort of shared land title. It wasn't really title, but if a community had occupied a certain space, they were sort of given de facto title to land. When that Article 26 or 27 of the Mexican Constitution was revoked, that then opened up people's land to privatization and private interests. So a lot of communities then have been forced to relocate from their lands. People will then go to the urban areas where there are not jobs either, and then they make the decision to come up north. But also understanding that in combination with the loss of the ejido system has also been drastic shifts in the Mexican economy, at the hands of U.S. corporate interests that has destroyed people's ability to sustain themselves on their own lands. The U.S. recently flooded the Mexican economy with cheap corn. That then meant that all of the people in Chiapas, in Zacatecas, in Oaxaca, who had sustained themselves by, you know, having small plots of land where they would grow corn, they would grow beans, and other crops and then sell them in the market, they couldn't do that anymore because the market had been flooded with cheap corn. They then